I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Squawk 7000. Well, on Friday last, we flew into Waterford Airport for an event to recognise 20 years of CHC Ireland providing helicopter search and rescue services on behalf of the Irish Coast Guard out of Waterford. On the same day, winchman Sarah Courtney, the recipient of a 2021 National Bravery Award, was presented with the CHC Excellence Service Award by Eugene Clonan, Acting Director of the Irish Coast Guard. Winchman Sarah Courtney, Ronan Flanagan, Adrian O'Hara from CHC Waterford Base and Aaron Hyland from CHC Shannon Base were awarded bravery certificates after they rescued 7 crew members from the Ellie Ov. It lost power and was in grave danger of sinking 70 nautical miles west of Bantry Bay. The act of bravery, which occurred on March 27, 2021, also saw Sarah Courtney awarded a silver medal. Sarah made a very gracious speech as she accepted the award.
Hello everybody, and thanks for coming today. It's great to see everybody here together, all together in one room, especially when we all work together and don't get to meet each other in these kind of circumstances quite often. I'm very honoured to accept this presentation today on behalf of the Coast Guard and our employer CHC, and also on behalf of the crew. Adrian O'Hara was the winch operator on that day, Ronan Flanagan was the pilot, and Captain Aaron Hyland, the pilot too. Thanks very much, and we'll talk to you again. Thank you.
And in a very busy airport terminal after the presentation, Sarah explained how she found herself with the career of winchman.
I worked in the ambulance service for 12 years. I was always interested in the helicopters and also interested in rescue, and combining the two of those in patient care and rescue on the helicopter was a bit of a pinnacle for me. So when the opportunity came up to apply for the recruitment process, I jumped at it and worked hard to get through the recruitment process, trained with guys here in Waterford to be qualified as winchmen, and I've been working on the helicopter now for 3 years here at Waterford Airport.
Our previous episode was on women in aviation, and one of the common themes that all the women said was they didn't want to be novelties anymore. They wanted to be just seen as active crew. You share that idea?
Absolutely. I feel in this country we're very fortunate with the way that living is in Ireland, and I never felt in all of the male-dominated environments that I've been in that I've ever been discriminated for being a female, and no different coming into this environment. I was treated exactly the same as everyone else, and I feel that is how it should be. There should be no differentiation between whether you're a man, woman, or anything else that anyone identifies with.
Sure.
It's just about the person and your capabilities and doing the job, and that's all that matters.
For the layperson, talking to somebody who's involved in something that has an element of bravery in it, they're often curious to know what your thought process is, and how does your brain work, and does it work at normal speed, and what are you thinking about as you're heading over towards that boat with 7 people on it?
You're very focused when you're on a mission like that. We train a lot when we're not not doing missions and we're on shift, then we're out training for these circumstances. So your training really kicks into gear. Obviously, they're high stress environments, and our training prepares us for that by having sequences and procedures that we follow. You're very focused, you're very aware of the situation and your situational awareness and everything that's going on around you. Your feelings really don't come into it because you've got to deal with the job at hand.
When you get back, that cup of tea must be very welcome.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's nothing more rewarding than being able to rescue somebody. And all of our main aims when we go out on a tasking or on any flight, as indeed it is for anybody, is that you achieve a good outcome if possible, and that everybody, it's done safely and everybody's safe and there's minimal injury occurred. So there's huge satisfaction, and there's huge relief also that everybody was able to leave that vessel.
Finally, for any young man or young woman listening to this particular episode, what would your encouragement be to follow your footsteps?
I think it's important to look out for what interests you and what you're passionate about. And if you're interested and passionate about something, then it's not as difficult to get there. And nothing worthwhile is ever easy. You don't get to decide that the helicopter looks cool and you'd like to work on that tomorrow. It takes a lot of hard work and dedication, but if it's something that you enjoy, then it won't be difficult at all.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Rob Tatton is the accountable manager for CHC in Ireland, and he outlined the history of CHC in Waterford and Rescue 117.
Well, we've been here 20 years, and this base is one of our four bases, Dublin, Sligo, Shannon and Waterford. And we have a huge amount of experience down here built up over the years. What I'd say to people is, when they often see the Coast Guard helicopter out flying, it's not necessarily on a search and rescue mission. It is on a training mission. The majority of the flights that we do are training, and that ensures that the skills that have been built up over 20 years by the crew is kept proficient and current, and when they need to go and complete a rescue, that they're able to do it successfully and safely, more importantly. And we're also here today to give an award to winchman Sarah Courtney, who lifted seven fishermen on the 27th of March 2021 off a vessel that was sinking. And it was a successful rescue, and it was conducted safely. And again, that goes back to the training that we do here at CHC.
We flew in here ourselves today for the podcast. As we were coming in, you could see Hookhead and Crookhead, and it really is a strategic location for you guys, isn't it, for the Irish Sea and the Georges Channel?
Yes, as I was saying, we have four bases. It's busy down here as well, and the coast that they cover down here. And funny enough, it's getting busier because of Brexit. There's more marine traffic coming out of Rosslare, going directly to Europe, and we can see it slightly reducing in Dublin, and that increase comes into Waterford. So we're definitely getting busier since I've been with the company nearly 3 years now, and it's definitely getting, you can see it getting busier over the last 3 years, particularly in the summer when we have the holiday makers.
Now, you're going to introduce us to a couple of the crew, and we're going to find out about, I suppose, what day-to-day operations here in Waterford.
Yes, we're going to introduce you to Mark Callaghan. He's one of our star captains. Neville Murphy, who did one of the podcasts with myself before on Squawk 7000. And we have Neil McAdam, who's been here 20 years. So he's been here from day one, and he's helped pull all of this together today with Mark, a very special event.
20 years. Now, I did have a little break. I went back to Dublin for 2 years, but then I came back. Waterford is now home for me.
And the one thing about the bases, and we've been talking to you know, the various different people who are in the different bases, is they all have their own personality. What's the personality of Waterford and the kind of stuff you do?
I think we have a great relationship with the local community. I think the local community very much see 117 as their rescue helicopter. I think that's unique to the rest of the country. And absolutely, we're their rescue helicopter. And they want to give us a bell, we're more than happy to go out there and do what we have to do for them.
Bring me back 20 years, and then we'll work our way to where we are today. How has the profile of the work changed, or has it changed?
It got busier, and I think because we're here so long, people are aware of us. In the early days, they weren't aware, and there was a rumour going around in the early days that it cost $5,000 to call us out. So people were reluctant to call us out. So we had to work very hard to expel that rumour and make people aware that that wasn't the case, and that if they call us out, there was no problem. Fucking good.
They're all arriving here behind us as well, Ed, for the event. And yeah, as I was saying to you, in the early days, you might have been doing a particular kind of work. Is it getting busier?
It's getting busier because there's more people. Obviously, with the pandemic, we had the staycationers, so a lot of people got themselves into trouble. Yeah. A lot of people went into the water that normally wouldn't. Yeah. From my own experience, thank God, there was no fatalities that I experienced, but there were some around the country, unfortunately. People went hill walking as well, and they weren't wearing very sensible shoes and breaking ankles and stuff. But other than that, you deal with the normal run of stuff, like fishermen injured, that type of thing, and air ambulance, and the old one over to London and back.
How did you get into this?
I always wanted to be a soldier, so I joined the army. And when I joined the army, they transferred me to the Air Corps. And I was in the Air Corps seeing these guys walk around in funny suits. So I made an inquiry, said, who are these guys? And Cook said to me, they're the search and rescue crew. So I said, I want that. Yeah. I'm going to do that. So I done my search and rescue course in 1989. It's gone back quite a ways. And thank God, passed it. Mm-hmm. And joined the Dublin base in 2000 and came down here in 2002.
And what is the work that you specifically do on the helicopter then when it goes out in a call?
Well, I'm a winchman, winch operator, so primarily a winch operator at the moment, so we would lower the winchman and give him whatever equipment he needs. He'll do the rescue, whether it be on a boat or taking somebody out of water. And once he's happy, I'll winch him back up, get back into the aircraft safely.
What control do you have over the helicopter at that point? Are you doing it verbally, or do you have, and what input can you make where the helicopter positions itself?
Yeah, it's variable. For the most part, it's variable. So the pilot can't see directly under him. Hmm. So he's following my patter, is what it's called, the language we use on board. And if I say go forward, three and right, the helicopter will go forward, three and right. If I say go back, it will go back. But that's the pilot responded to my power. Hmm. We also have a crew hover that I can actually take control of the aircraft with. It's limited, but it's the science, so to get you into tighter spots that you wouldn't normally go into. And because the pilot can't see it, I might actually be able to guide it a little bit more precise than he could.
What's the connection between you then and the person who's on the wire?
He or she is the winchman now. They are attached to the helicopter through the cable. So basically, they're really putting their lives in their hands. So because I'm the winch operator, I'm standing at the door, so I can see them at all times. So it would be my decision whether to put them on a bow or say, it's getting a bit hairy, and not put them on the bow. But they're really putting their safety into our hands. There's a lot of trust there. So,
but there's also a lot of training. You do a lot of practice. I'm imagining, for example, coming up to something like a trawler with aerials and radars and all the bits and pieces on it. That's when you're focused.
You're very focused. You're also, it's weather conditions are the big thing there, because a small fishing boat will move quickly on the water. It will roll and it will pitch, and it's the pitch going up and down is the problem. If you get your timing wrong as the winch operator, the winchman will get hurt.
Boat will come up and meet them.
It will meet him and it will hit him or her. Yeah. So what you got to do is, most boats have a rhythm. The sea has a rhythm. So you observe the boat, figure out its rhythm, and when it settles, that's when you put the winchman on the deck. So it's timing's everything.
In the 20 years, any particular memorable experiences that you've had?
The first rescue we ever did down here as Rescue 117, it was on the 11th of May 2002, and it was a guy who was literally hanging by his fingernails off a cliff down in Bunmahan. And what stands out for me on that one, that he just got a bit too close, he fell, but his wife and six-year-old child were standing there watching it. And it was one of those rescues where if I was the winchman on that one, had I hit him or bumped off him the wrong way, he could have fallen. So I had to be really precise, and thank God we were able to get him and bring him home to his wife and child.
Finally, I suppose, let's talk about today. I believe you've been the man behind putting all of the events together, and you've kept yourself busy with it too.
It's been pretty busy. So, but had lots of help, in fairness, and Aidan Power, the airport manager here, has been great help, and our own guys have been fantastic. So me being the guy to put it together, not really, there was plenty of us involved.
Barry O'Connor has been one of the pilots at the base in Waterford for the past 20 years. Barry explained more about the helicopter Rescue 117.
Okay, we're using a Sikorsky S-92, an American built aircraft. It replaced the Sikorsky S-61, which I flew before that. It's like just a big improvement on the S-61. The S-61 was a great aircraft, but it was just starting to show its age. So along came the S-92. It's just far more efficient. It's faster. It can lift more. It's a twin engine aircraft. And we have a small little APU as well, which we use to start the engines, which is very useful also when we're landing, say, in fields. We can basically shut down the engines if we're bringing a casualty in and out on the ramp, but we can leave the APU running for quick startup, for if we get a second shout, for example, or we're bringing the casualty to hospital.
Tell us a little bit more about that, the idea of being in a state of readiness and what a typical shift is like when you arrive to the time you spend and how you're ready to go.
Okay, sure. Well, the shift starts officially at 1300 hours. Generally speaking, you're in by kind of 12:30 to relieve your opposite number. So your opposite number will tell you what they did on the shift before. If there's any issues with the aircraft, any snags that there may be, you may have kind of a tasking that day. When I say a tasking, it might be like a Coast Guard exercise. We're working with all the ground teams, which we work with regularly, and it's great to work with them. Or even other events, like maybe a school visit or something like that. So generally speaking, you're ready to go. Also the weather. So you come in, we do the weather, we do the planning. So effectively, by 1300, we're ready to go. And then we're on a 15-minute readiness up to 9 p.m. Now, we're near the end of May here now, so coming the 1st of June, we'll actually change the timings for the three summer months, I should say. So for June, July, and August, we'll actually go to 10 p.m. on 15 minutes readiness, and we'll be back in for 8:30, whereas normally we'll be back in for 7:30. And during the hours of standby time after, during the nighttime, we're at 45 minutes. So generally speaking, if you live within 20 minutes of the base, we'll be in if we get a call out. And what happens normally is the duty captain will get the call, and he will basically approve the shout or whatever.
And describe that 15 minutes for us as to what happens. A message comes from a central location and you're ready to go.
Yeah, look, we have a dedicated scramble phone. So that rings, and basically that'll also ring in the hangar, so the engineers are listening straight away. So if the aircraft is not already out, it'll be taken out. Depending on the where we're going, we have a standard fuel of about 2.5 hours. So I will either ask the engineers for more fuel if it's a further away job, or I think it's going to take a little bit more time, or our standard fuel. We'll also have a quick look at the weather, particularly if it's a poor day, to give us any alternates in case we can't come back to Waterford. And the shout itself may mean that we're going to Dublin, or we're going to Shannon, or we're going to Cork. So in that 15 minutes, it's very, very active. We're also changing possibly from our daytime kind of flight suit, possibly into an emergency suit, depending on the time of the year.
Because we're here on the coast, there's a very strong chance you could be going out over the sea.
Oh yeah, oh very much so. So we have an emergency suit, which obviously you can't wear on a normal basis, shall we say. So it takes a couple of minutes to get into that. And then obviously once we're in that, normally what happens is that the duty co-pilot of the day will go out to the aircraft, and he'll get the aircraft started up and supervise any extra fuel that we might be getting. Well, the captain is having a conversation with the duty winch up to say, right, this is the plan. Are we happy with the plan? This is where we're going. Are we happy with the weather? And the two of us in effect kind of say, yeah, look, we're happy to go, and away we go.
Typically, how many casualties can you assist?
We've one stretcher. So primarily there's one stretcher. But look, if it's a mass casualty incident, let's say, for example, there's a vessel sinking, you know, you're going to take as many as necessary on board. Obviously, we recently rescued 7 people there, the Eliov, quite recently. If required, you can kind of fill them, but certainly if they're stretcher related or spinal related, then we're a bit more restricted in space. But yeah,
talk about the idea of CRM. People are always interested in crew resource management. How do you keep the whole crew involved in that process?
Well, we have a briefing every day, so at 1:15 the 6 crew will get together, so including the 2 engineers in that as well, and we would set out a plan for the next 24 hours. It might be a case of, as I said, we might have an exercise already pre-booked, or we might, if we don't, we'll plan a training flight. So we have various currencies that people will need to keep current. So somebody might say, well, look, I need to do some decks, or I need to do some cliffs, or whatever. So we have a good chat in that respect. And part of that briefing is the case. It's also, you know, is everybody kind of ready for the shift? Is, you know, everybody kind of, is it just start of a run of shifts? Is it the end of a run of shifts? All that sort of thing is taken into account.
We headed out to Rescue 117, where winchman Neville Murphy gave us a tour inside.
Today's a special day, obviously, 20 years down the road. Hard to believe that time went so fast. And, you know, we've been here for that time and integrated into the community as well, I think, is very particular. You know, a lot of our work here in Waterford Airport, and they've been a huge support to us throughout those 20 years as well, you know. I mean, literally, you can see here in the backdrop is the Cumber Mountains, you know, a couple of minutes flight time away. Tremor Beach is just down the road there, so we're over water within minutes of this place as well. So, you know, we've kind of everything on our doorstep really here, and it's a perfect spot for Sarr.
Now, you're part of the active crew today. You're already in the gear.
Yeah, absolutely. I just came on shift in the middle of today, so we took over. We're on for 24 hours now. So we're all set up. We're actually going on the training flight about 4 o'clock this afternoon. So, you know, we celebrate, but, you know, the work continues, and hopefully it'll stay quiet today.
The helicopter we're on, and we should explain, because people won't be able to see, is the back ramp is open. Talk to me about the actual facilities and how this is helpful.
Yeah, the SDN2 is a beautiful platform. As you can see, we're standing inside it. And, you know, for ourselves in the back in particular, we've two paramedics normally in the back of the aircraft. For us to be able to walk around, and you can see the stretcher station here as well. You know, we can stand over it, we can treat the people with the medical equipment mounted up in a shelf here for it. And this ramp here, as you see in the back, the ramp lowers down and the door comes up, so we can literally walk a stretcher in and walk a stretcher out. So for particular, like the HEMS, air ambulance kind of side of things, it's really beneficial for that. As well as, you know, if we have the stretcher, a patient, we can get into the hospital and exit the aircraft pretty lively, you know, if needs be.
We hear medical people talk about a golden hour, a sort of a window of opportunity. How much does what's in this helicopter, in this space here, help?
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, literally, it's a flying ambulance, you know, and the crew in the back are trained as well. We have advanced paramedics and paramedics in the back, so the treatment is at the upper level from that side of things, you know. So it's fantastic aircraft, loads of space inside in it, and absolutely ideal for that work.
How did you get into this?
Many moons ago, I was in the military, the Irish Army, and I transferred up to the Irish Air Corps, flew in Alouettes for a while and Dolphins and for a couple of years, and then progressed onto the with the Irish Coast Guard into the and CHC onto the 61, and now the 92.
You know, memories of the 61. Did you like it?
She was like the old workhorse, to be honest, you know, and I suppose that's the only way I describe it. And this is like the Porsche, and that's the real. It's new technology. I mean, the mission station we have in back for the winch crew with the floor and integrated mapping system with the front two pilots in the front. So it's really the crew concept front and back is huge in this aircraft, and it facilitates that with the technology on board.
I wish you a quiet shift, and thanks for chatting to us.
Thanks very much. No bother.
Mark O'Callaghan was the duty pilot on Friday last, and he had just come on duty.
Mark O'Callaghan, we're here beside the helicopter, and you're already for action right this minute.
Yeah, we just came on shift at 1300 today, and that shift period continues for 24 hours, so we'll be off going at 1300 tomorrow.
Tell me about the helicopter, what it's like to fly.
It's an incredible bit of kit. It's probably one of the newest S-92s, Sarwise, that we have. $50 million worth. The technology, albeit a little bit old, it's still a very, very capable aircraft. Obviously, we have dual engines, dual hoist for redundancy, and a specially prepared medical station at the back, which is differs slightly from the other aircraft from around the country. But the guys in the back very, very much enjoy it. It's a great machine.
What's the nature of the work that happens here out at Waterford?
Waterford is kind of, I wouldn't say it's unique, but we do get a nice broad spectrum of jobs because we have the Cumber Mountains quite close by, so we get up to the mountains quite a bit. We also have a lot of inshore calls as well, and we do a lot of river searches, people searches, stuff like that, and obviously we do the maritime element as well offshore. Yeah.
I believe there's something on the front of the helicopter that the guys were telling me about, this forward facing infrared.
Correct, yeah, so that's one of the main bits of kit that we have for navigating. Well, it helps us with navigation, but also for the guys in the back to pick out people in the water, to identify targets, and we use it through all phases of flight, so it's a very, very important bit of kit for us.
How do you find a person or a small boat or a life raft in a sea?
Initially, if a call was to come in from MRCC, if we were lucky enough to have a rough location of where the incident is, that does help. It kind of narrows it down. And then another thing is, like, if people themselves kind of have personal locator beacons on board, that's even a bigger help as well. So we'd always encourage people, if they are out in the water, to be well equipped when you're out in the water. So we'd get an initial call, a rough position of where the person would be, and we would just go out. Initially we would start to search just looking out the window, and then this is where the FLIR then really comes into its own, because it can scan a massive area very, very quickly, and what it works off is heat signature. So it's able to pick up heat signature very, very quickly, and there's excellent definition and clarity in the screen. So that's one of the main things that we would use to pick up people at sea.
Finally, how did you end up in this position?
I started flying back in, I was still in university at the stage, and I was doing my private pilot's license. Finished university, worked for about a year, decided I wanted to do the flying full time, so then I went to America, trained there for 2 years. I came back then and I actually started to work for CHC over in Aberdeen, flying to the oil rigs for about 5 years on the S92, and then transferred to CHC Ireland to fly in the SAR contract for the Irish Coast Guard. So I've been here about 5 years now.
What's today look like for you, and the expectation that you don't get an actual call out? What would be the plans?
Barring a call, we're just going to do planning a training sortie later on. So we'll probably lift at maybe about 3 or 4 o'clock, and we generally try to get up for about 2 hours of training every shift. So we'll just see what's around. If there's a boat offshore that's willing to do some winching, we might do that. Might go into the mountains. We can go wherever. It's a great position to be in.
So it's not just sitting having a cup of tea for the day.
No. That'll come later.
Mark O'Callaghan, thanks for chatting to us.
No problem. Thanks very much.
Well, stay with us on this episode. Coming up in part two, we talk with the airport manager at Waterford, Aidan Power, about the future of this essential regional airport.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to Squawk 7000, Ireland's aviation podcast. We're in Waterford Airport celebrating 20 years of CHC and Rescue 117 at the base here. And while we're here, we're also catching up too on the airport itself and its manager, Aidan Power.
Hi, Aidan Power here, the airport manager for Waterford Airport. Delighted you can be here today.
A real pleasure, actually. And as we mentioned earlier, we had the pleasure of flying into the airport too, and actually quite busy. There was a fair amount of traffic coming in as well. The story of Waterford right now, and then we'll go back and talk about where it's come from and maybe where it's going to, but what's happening here right now?
Right now, we've got, obviously, CHC are based here for the search and rescue for Irish Coast Guard, which is something that we're very proud of over the years. Obviously, today, 20 years anniversary. And we've got quite a bit of GA activity as well. We've got the Aero Club doing pilot training. You've got AFTA do pilot training. I suppose we've always been associated, now that I say it, with pilot training for many, many years. I think probably about four pilot training schools over the years, back from the Iona days, and ECA and all those have been based here. And so it's GA has always been part and parcel of what we do here. And we've got executive aircraft coming in and going out as well. It's an eclectic mix of, you never quite know what's going to turn up on any particular day, from, you know, a Gulfstream to an unusual general aviation aircraft. So yeah, it can be quite interesting, helicopter ops as well. So there's and you can get unusual activities for periods of time, like geographical surveying, maritime survey, that sort of stuff. So what tends to happen is a group who may have heard of Waterford Airport or have tried this before, if something fits, they tend to come back to you. A regional airport like this can be a good fit for some operations of that nature.
Because it is actually it's a snapshot of an international airport. Yes. You have all the experience, all the nav aids, the air traffic control, and even, dare I say, on Sky Demon, which is used by pilots for navigation, your ratings are extremely high in terms of friendliness. So all of that's in place. But I suppose people would also be curious to know about commercial flights in and out of this particular region. That must be a challenge for you as the airport manager to have that on your agenda.
Sure. Well, look, we've been doing scheduled flights from the 80s. Obviously, famous Ryanair started.
Early days of Ryanair.
Yeah. Back in the Bandeirante days, and then moved on to the 748 and the ATRs and so on. So they were interesting days for sure to be part of it. I started in the business in 88 when Ryanair were here as part of the airport operations side. So I've been involved in the full gambit of operations. Yeah. And yeah, scheduled services have run. We had Air Ireland here, British Regional Airways, Flybe was very successful here as well. I suppose we kind of went through a very good phase in the 90s, was very strong, 2000s as well, when Air Ireland were here. Probably the London route was one of their best routes on all of their networks. It was that strong. And VLM were the final airline to finish up here in 2016. So the general, I suppose, the way that's developed is it's difficult to compete really when you've got 50-seater or 60-seater turboprop competing in today's terms with a jet runway where there's 180 seats. And with the best will in the world, even though we would have had very high load factors for the like of Flybe on a Dash 8, and at times for the Birmingham route, it would have been up in the high 80s, 90%. The price point is a very difficult proposition. And you can sell a place like Waterford Airport or any of the other regions, really, on a convenience factor. And there's always that kind of line where people are happy to pay what they would see as, you know, some extra cost, and that's basically because the seat price. If you've got 50 people as opposed to 180 people, or 60 people according as opposed to 180 people, obviously the price point is going to be higher. And so people are happy to pay a certain amount, and there's a comfort zone in that, but there's a limit to that as well. And therein is the challenge.
Well, what the growth seems to be, the way you describe it there, is the business aircraft. So I mean, you have the infrastructure here, and people can actually use this as an entry point into the country from their executive aircraft.
Yeah, we get quite a few executive aircraft, everything, quite a gambit of aircraft type, actually. For people who have residencies in the southeast, to the businesses, the pharmaceuticals and others. Because in essence, for the south, particularly in Waterford, there's no real headquarters here. So anybody who wants to expand, any of the businesses who are here or looking at expanding, they need to get a European or a world CEO into the country. It's not a great proposition to fly them into Dublin and do a two and a half.
Drive them down, exactly.
It's very difficult for them.
Yeah.
So flying into Waterford is, and they're 15 minutes into the city or into their business or half an hour, it's a real winner for them. Thankfully, the airport road was developed. The old road was quite something. And when they put the new infrastructure in, we got the business park next door, which is independent of us. But, you know, I think it really helped the whole strategy of trying to develop the airport. And in fairness to the county council, city and county council, which is one now, they are very pro-airport, Wexford as well, and Kilkenny. So part of what we're trying to do at the moment is, obviously, we've made a planning application for a runway extension that has been successful. A bit longer than we would have liked. It's taken probably 2 years between the planning and CPOs, etc. So we've been successful with that for the first time. We've probably looked at runway extensions since the 90s, but it didn't happen for various reasons. We're trying to put together an investment proposition for expanding the runway lengthwise and widening it to, we'll call it regional jet status, so you can now get into mainstream 737 Airbus 320 kind of status. And along with that, obviously, the business aircraft as well. Those ones that are might be a little bit shy of landing on a shorter runway, who are used to kind of 2,000 metres plus runway, it opens it up to that as well.
Finally, we have general aviation pilots listening to this podcast. What's your message to them if they're going flying this summer?
Well, certainly give us a try. I think we've always had a very good attitude towards general aviation. Not to be too put off by the idea of air traffic control or ATC space. The controllers here have been here for many, many years, used to a general aviation community, and, you know, are very happy to talk people through the process. And we had to kind of stop it, I suppose, for the COVID process, but we used to actually encourage pilots to come up to the control tower when there was time available to do it and let them see what it's like from an air traffic controller's perspective. I did ATC for about 10 years. It's part of my growth over the years. So, you know, we're very aware of what the pilot's view of life is, and it's nice if the controllers could see it from, or sorry, the pilot can see it from the controller's perspective as well. Not to be put off by ATC or the process of control airspace. It is here to stay, unfortunately, for GA pilots. I know many kind of lament the old, you know, Class G, lots of Class G around, but I suppose, you know, it's inevitable that more controlled airspace was going to come in. But I wouldn't, you know, certainly give it a go, and always make the phone call first. If you can get the controller at the other end of the phone, it's always good, especially if you're a first time flyer into that particular aerodrome. They'll cop on to that very quickly, and you know, you'll get a good rapport, and it's always a good thing from my perspective.
And that's our episode. Congratulations again to the crews of Rescue 117 and also to Winchman Sarah Courtney, the recipient of the 2021 National Bravery Awards. I'm off to file a flight plan. We'll talk to you again soon.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.